So our next speaker is Muhammad Agahi, and he's speaking on characterizing the development and survival of Zea and injury to different cotton tissue types and different BT protein combinations for use in IRM modeling.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So this project is very similar to the previous project in terms of we did very similar things in looking at the different types of injury on squares, flowers, and bowls, but I analyze things a little bit differently. So obviously the rationale for this is Helicoverpa zea causes a lot of yield loss, and there's obviously preliminary data suggesting that resistance is increasing, particularly with Cry1AC. But the issue was these newer varieties have these multiple genes, and so you can't necessarily rely on the single gene model to predict resistance. And also, all damage is not created equal. As it's been mentioned before, boring into the bowl or boring or holes into the ovaries is generally more damaging to the cotton plant than, say, just superficial feeding. But it's not always a binomial response, because we notice that in the literature, it's always, if it's any sort of injury, it's counted as injured. We wanted to really break it apart and see what types of injury cause abscission, which you saw in the previous presentation. I did some different things. So similar to the previous study, I looked at what type of damage contributes to abscission. Is there a difference to damage type between varieties? But the thing that really sets this project apart from the previous one is, can we use these differences in damage patterns to monitor resistance? That is ultimately the end goal of this study. For the methods, we compared the same cotton varieties from the previous presentation, a non-BT, wide strike, Bolgar 2, and twin leak. And these represent the following combinations of cry proteins. And we tagged 40 bowls, 40 squares, 40 flowers in each plot. So in a total of 16 plots, it was a randomized complete block. And we quantified the area of damage in square millimeters with the exception of bore holes, and we counted that as just the diameter. So we looked at bract, sepals, wall feeding, diameter, petal feeding, and we also took note of whether or not it abscised. And we did this over time. So we began in the second week of August until the second week of September. And I did two different kinds of statistical analyses. First was a multiple logistic regression to look at what contributed to abscission. And so I had to collapse the time factor for that. And then the second statistical analysis, I just simply wanted to look at how the different varieties essentially reacted to damage. For each type of damage at the square, flower, and bowl stage. Now, for the purposes of this presentation, I only have the bowl stage data. Now, when we look at squares and whether or not what's contributing to abscission, we clearly see that hole is positively associated with abscission. We see that with Bolgar 2, there's a negative association, and with the non-BT, there's a positive association. Twin link, even though it has a negative association, it wasn't statistically significant. Now, unfortunately, because of this statistical analysis, it kind of used wide strike as a way to compare all the different varieties against each other. So, actually, I didn't put in the odds ratio chart, but the wide strike was similar to Bolgar 2 and twin link in that one. When we look at flowers, again, holes are a standout. Bract, sepal, and petal feeding really was not statistically significant, even though these coefficients are positive here, not a big deal. But here's something strange. Bolgar 2, it has a strong negative association with abscission, but twin link had a strong positive association with abscission. And the non-BT was almost significant, but we can see it has that negative, for some reason, a negative association with abscission. Now I want to see how that compared with the wide strike, and this is using these odds ratio estimates. We see that wide strike was, for some reason, wide strike was very different from the non-BT, while it was similar to the Bollgart 2 and the Twin Link in terms of responding to injury. When we look at Bolls, it's a bit all over the place. Everything was associated with abscission in some shape, way, or form, but Bracht and Siepel injury had a negative association with abscission, so it's obviously not contributing to abscission. Holes definitely were positive, and we see that Bollgart 2 had a negative association. Twin Link and the non-BT had this increasing positive association with abscission. And again, using this to compare it to the wide strike, we see that it's acting differently compared to the non-BT and the twin link. And I'm sorry for the statistical heavy tables. I promise I have bar graphs that will show things more clearly. Now, one thing I noticed is that we're starting in second week of August, going through September. And so I want to look at how bowls that originated as squares or flowers would act compared to bowls that we tagged initially in August. And here we see that the results are somewhat different, very different from the bowls that we had tagged initially in August. We just see that steeples stand out and it's having a negative association with abscission. And we see that, you know, it's very odd that the non-BT is having a negative association with abscission while the twin link has a strongly positive association with abscission. And then we have flower. Bowls that were originally tagged as flowers are having this negative association with abscission. And then using the odds ratio estimates to figure out what happened with the square and the wide strike, we see that, well, the flowers and the squares responded similarly, and the wide strike was responding similarly to the twin link. So here's a graph that is a bit more interesting, makes more sense. So when we're looking at the different types of injury across the different varieties, we see some separation in the bracts. We see that the Bollgart has lower average mean damage compared to the non-BT, but it's also kind of separating out from wide strike and twin link. Well, in the sepals, the non-BT is definitely different from the rest of the BT varieties, but here we see that the wall damage is very similar between wide strike and the non-BT, and the other two non-BT varieties are just on their own. And then in terms of hole, which is the diameter, we see, you know, a similar trend to the sepals, non-BT being held differently than the BT varieties. Now this is just for the bowls. I should stress that this is just for the bowls that were tagged in August. Now when we look at bowls that were initially tagged as flowers or squares, and I'm sorry, for some reason the lettering went away. For all of them, the non-BT is significantly different from the three BT varieties. There's no differences between the BT varieties. So I thought, well, why is that happening? Why do we see this response with the similar response between the non-BT and the wide strike when we tagged them as bowls in August versus the ones that we tagged as squares and flowers initially? And that's probably because there was more time that the bowls were exposed to bollworm. And so that's something that might have to change in next year's study, where we will have to extend the time that we're, instead of 5 weeks, maybe go 6-7 weeks, so that the time that the boll is exposed to bollworm is the same for both bowls that were tagged initially and those that would become bowls from squares and flowers. So the takeaway right now is that the holes largely determine abscission. We kind of already knew that, but we just wanted to check. Tissues tagged as squares or flowers responded differently to damage at the bowl stage, and that's probably because, again, because of the exposure period. Now, one problem here is that, you know, sepal and wall damage, are not, they're not necessarily independent of a holing event. A lot of the time we saw that the bowl worms were chewing on the sepals before they got to the wall. They're either chewing on the wall before they try to penetrate in. So that's something for the next step that I have to do is really try to separate that association out. Now from this, bract and wall feeding might be good resistance indicators. As we saw with the bowl damage data across the varieties, we saw some separation at the bract level, and we saw some differences with the wall feeding. Now, ideally, you would think it would be sepals, because typically that's where the bollworms are beginning to feed, that's where they're typically hanging out. But I think because, you know, there's more area to feed on when we look at bracts and walls versus sepals, that looking at changes in feeding on the bracts and the walls might be more helpful. But there's still more to be done. I have not finished analyzing all this data. We still have to do the ELISA for the BT expressions within the tissue types and between squares, flowers, and bowls, and between bracts, sepals, walls, and within the bowl. And hopefully we could try to correlate damage trends with BT expression trends, and maybe that'll help further explain why we see that, say, wall damage in wide strike and wall damage in the non-BT are very similar. And I still have to analyze the data from South Carolina. And unfortunately, we did not get data from Mississippi this year, but hopefully we will next year. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge all the people that helped out with this project and funding from USDA NIFA. Thank you very much. Any questions?
We have time for questions.
I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but I remember some time back we were looking at some of these same issues, and it appeared that naturally the cotton plants wouldn't shed fruit because of the physiological response to the environment, right? Clearly, damage can cause that. But the question we were trying to address was if the plant is going to naturally shed fruit, mm-hmm. for reasons other than damage, would the plant then, so let's say it's going to shed 20% of its square because of response to heat or dry weather, whatever. It appeared in our data that the plant was, in a sense, assessing the squares and preferentially shedding those that had damage. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the undamaged squares that are tagged, we saw the same basic percentage being shed without damage. Mm-hmm. But I guess my question is, and this is the whole reason why I think we do thresholds, because it appeared to me that you know you're going to shed, you know, over the course of the season 60% of your squares. Is the plant preferentially been shedding those that are damaged by insects and not in a random fashion?
So the good thing about I can't answer the question right now, but we do have the data to do that. So the Arun actually looked at natural abscission rates for damaged and undamaged. So what I have to do now is to take that data and incorporate it into my model. And then I will be able to tell you. But from just kind of anecdotal from what I saw later in the season, particularly in September, I'd see squares that would have like 4 square millimeters of damage, and it would just fall right off, and just on the bracts. So it didn't seem to be such a, you know, it didn't seem a heavy level of damage. I mean, a little bract feed shouldn't hurt anybody, but it, that does seem to be the case. But hopefully I'll be able to quantify it exactly.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.